Welcome everybody, good morning.
It's great to see everybody. I'd like to read out our sponsorships for today. The Wednesday morning Beit Midrash here in Rehavia is dedicated Le'ilu Nishmois Daniel ben David and Limud bat Avram Strauss and Mordechai ben Moshe and Reisel ben Yosef Meir Marcus, Zichron and Livracha. They are the parents of Judy and Menachem Marcus. Thank you so much for that. And also the my shir is sponsored through the academic year, Le'elu Nishmois Brana Vas Brandit and Zelig Ben Kalman Zichronim Livrocha. Very, very grateful for that sponsorship. Thank you. If I could remind you please to turn off your phones. I hope you picked up the sheet. Some of you may have been a little bit in shock when you picked this up, because there's only three pages to it. So you may have concluded either that they forgot to print the other 15 pages, or that I'm only planning to talk for 8 minutes and then run away. But actually, these three pages will take us through one of the most fascinating halakhic and hashgafic discussions. And I do need to finish bang on time today, maybe even a minute early, because I'm meant to be flying to London today. Was meant to be flying later this evening, and then Elal put my flight to this morning, and then I said, well, I'll miss the shir on Wednesday, and then we managed to get it back again. So, Baruch Hashem, I hope that we're in good shape. Now, I won't be here next week, and the 2 weeks from now, I'm traveling, please God, around England and then around America, but I hope to be back with you 3 weeks from today. And the topic I'd like to conclude with you today is part two of the what we started. I suppose it's a couple of weeks ago, because last week was Yom HaAtzmaut, which was the issue of the mitzvah v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, which of course is in this week's parasha we just read in Kedoshim, the mitzvah of loving other people, certainly other Jews, maybe even broader than that, like one loves oneself. And we looked at different ways last time that we can help us to love people even if we don't like them. I would like to look today at perhaps an even more important question, which is, where do we draw the line? And this is not at all clear, except unless you go deeper into the sugya, because we can't be all things to all people. There has to be a limit to how much chesed that we do, because there comes a point when we begin to wear ourselves out and actually cause ourselves damage. So where are we going to draw that line? I'd like to give two very different examples. One was when I was a lawyer back in the old country 25 years ago. So my Sundays were very precious. You know, I worked very long weeks, and Shabbos was great, but it was very hectic. But Sunday was our day to do stuff. You know, you remember Sundays back in the day? So my Sunday afternoon used to look like this. I used to look out of my front window in my front yard, and there was a line of people with usually beards and black hats waiting to knock on my door. And they're coming not just to wish me a happy Sunday, but they're coming because they want to collect money. And let's assume that they're all legit and they've all got the right piece of tilgah, whatever that proves. Let's assume. But my Sunday literally was jumping up and down and up and down. And every time I sat down with my kids to do a little bit of their homework, a knock on the door, ring of the bell, hello, you're running an orphanage. Amazing, yes. This one's getting... And just 2002, when I left England, they were just beginning to get these, like, PowerPoint presentations and video presentations. And this one, and like, amazing. Let's assume they're all doing amazing work. This one runs a seminary, this one runs a yeshiva, this one, this one, this one. But there comes a point where, like, I can't manage anymore. I try 3 times to sit down and go through my homework with my kid or to talk to my wife, and I keep running up and answering the door. At what point do I say, I'm not answering the door? But what if there's someone collecting the door because his kid, God forbid, has a life-threatening disease, he needs money to save his life? What's more important, my son's homework or his son's life? Now, obviously, when you put it like that, obviously his son's life. So do I have to answer the door? So that's one example. When do I say, no, I have to put other people first? And another, perhaps more serious example is, I had a student many years ago, a very nice young lady. She was struggling with depression, and she was on top of it. It was a serious issue for her, but she had good therapy, she had good medication, and she's not the only person struggling, but she had a particularly difficult situation. And she did very well. A couple of years later, I had a phone call from her, and she said, I'm in college, and I have a particular friend who has latched onto me, and this friend is suicidal. And the friend is just out of control in terms of mental health. And this friend has become almost like just clinging onto me to the point that she's saying to me that it's only me, this student was telling me, that's keeping her alive. And if it wasn't for me, then she would, who knows what, God forbid. And the student said to me, this friendship is so toxic for me that it's dragging me back down into depression. But what can I do? Because her need is life-threatening. My need is serious, but it's mental health. Do I need to be there for her? Can I just break off with her and not worry about the consequences? That's a very serious shiner. And today's shiur will not give us a trite, quick, one-off answer, but it'll give us a methodology for how to deal with those kind of questions. When it comes to Bein Adam L'Chaveru mitzvahs, the Torah doesn't give one-size-fits-all questions. You know, when you go to a rav because you dropped a fleishig spoon in a milchik pot, then, like, okay, it doesn't really matter who you ask, it doesn't really matter, you pull someone out of Yellow Pages, if people remember what that used to be, anyone can answer that question. But if you have a much more personal and interpersonal question, the Torah doesn't just give quick fixes. It gives ideas and methodologies, and you have to plug them in. I mean, Kibbud Av Ha'Eim is a classic example. If you just read what it says in the books about Kibbud Av Ha'Eim, don't give it much thought, and then go home and do that for your mum and dad, or for your, it'll be a disaster. So you need to give it thought, but here we'll see right now. Number one. This is very famous. Many people say it every morning. Most people, I think, number one, Eilu Dvarim She'ein Lahem Shi'ur. Mishnah in Peah. The following things have no Shi'ur, as opposed to, I don't know, shaking a lulav, the lulav has a Shi'ur, or eating matzah, the matzah has a fixed amount. These don't have a fixed amount. Hapeah, leaving the corner of the field. You can leave as little or as much as you want for the poor. And the Mishnah later on gives a recommended amount, a 60th or whatever. And by the way, it's an interesting question why we don't do that today. I'm not getting into that now. But the Peah, corner of the field. Habikurim, bringing the first fruits to the temple. You can bring as little or as much as you wish. Harayon, the amount that you spend on the Korban Ri'iyah and the Shalmei Chagigah that you're bringing on Yom Tov when you go to the Beit HaMikdash, you're buying a Korban, you can buy as many or as few, there's no fixed shear. And then Ugmilut Chasadim, doing chesed for other people has no limit. V'Talmud Torah, and learning Torah a little bit or all day, a whole life, 5 minutes, there is no fixed amount where you can say, I've done it, I did the shear. With matzah, you can say, I ate it, I don't want to eat anymore. With Talmud Torah, there's no end. So what do we mean when we say chesed? So the first thing the Rav Avadi Baratza Nura says in number two is gimlut chasadim d'begufo. This is chesed that we do personally. As opposed to what? As opposed to with money. But chesed that we do personally, kagon, bikur chaylim, visiting the sick, likvor mesim, attending a funeral, ukeyotzi bahem, etc. But with your money, kagan, pidyon shvuim, when you need to collect money to pay a ransom, you're not going personally to get the person out of captivity, you're paying money. Ula halbish arumim, or contributing to buy clothes for those who are very needy. Ula hachil et hare'evim, or to give to a soup kitchen or to whoever's providing food. When you're giving your money, there is a fixed halachic limit. That each time you have this mitzvah that comes to your hand to contribute, the maximum you can give is chamishit min harevach shebenachasa, a fifth of your income, which is quite a lot of money, actually. Okay, and if you keep doing that, then you will quickly have nothing left. But there is a fixed amount. You don't have to give more. You shouldn't give more. V'tulo, and you mustn't give more, except in rare cases. Okay? V'tulo v'chayim, and you're not obligated to give more. The hachi amrina, v'vazvez, and that's why he says, if you're going to spend money, al tevazvez, al yivazvez, yotem mikhoimish. Now, there are unusual people in this world who could give away 98% of their wealth and never notice that it's gone, but that's not many of us. Most of us, if we give away a fifth, that's already a fortune, and you can't give more than that. But when it comes to your personal effort, Bikur Chaylem, Hachnasat Orchim, etc., leaving aside the money side of it, there is no fixed limit. Now that's a problem. What I have to go to, how many people are there in hospital that could benefit from a visit from you? Even if you say, you know, even just your friends, even just people that you're mildly acquainted with, you say, you know something, if I go visit her, it'll make her thousands probably. You're going to spend your whole day doing Bikur Chaylem or Ein Lahem Shi'ur? You're going to go to every Leviah? every wedding. Okay, it'd be lovely to go to every wedding. You can't go to every single wedding. You'll never do anything else. So where are we going to draw that line? When it says there is no shi'ur, there has to be a limit, but it's saying there's no fixed limit. But you have to work out what the limit is, and we'll see what that is in a minute. Let us see the Rambam for a second and remind ourselves of this very important Rambam in number 3. Mitzvah zashah shel divreihem levakeh cholim. It's a rabbinic mitzvah to visit the sick, lenachem aveilim, to go to a shiva, lahotzi ames, to go to a funeral, bring out the body, lahachnis hakala, to bring in the kala, lalavos ha'orchim, inviting guests, leitzasik b'kol tzarchi ha'kfura, to do everything you need for a funeral, laseita laketef, to take the body out, leilech lefanav, to walk in the levaya, lispot, to give the hespedim, lichbor, lachbor, and then to dig the grave, etc. The chenis ameich hakala v'hachasim, we looked at this last time, so too to give simcha to the kala, to the chosin of the wedding, l'sa'adam kol b'kol sarcheik, and to buy them wedding gifts. Fine. And the very important line now, that Elohim gimuscha sadim shebegufo. He passes this idea. This is chesed you do personally with your personal effort, she'ein lahem shi'ur. And he brings this Mishnah. There is no limit. And then he says, afal pi she'kol mitzvos elu medivreim, and even though we've just said these are rabbinic obligations to go to a funeral, to go to a shiva, to go to a wedding, harehim bichlal v'yahavta l'reicha kamocha. They are actually included within v'yahavta l'reicha kamocha, and we talked about this last week. Very important idea. Every chesed that we do, even though the rabbis gave a structure as to these are the things you should be focused on, everything you do is a Torah mitzvah. Every chesed you do is the mitzvah v'yahavta l'reicha kamocha. We talked about that last week. So where are we going to find the limit? So the way we're going to do this is we're going to look at a few sugyot. Some of them are very famous. Some of them are much less famous. And we'll see how we piece this together. The beginning is two psukim in Dvarim. And the psukim says as follows, in number 4. Efes ki lo yihye b'cha evyon. There will never be any poor people, God promises. Ki berach yivarecha Hashem ba'aretz, because God has blessed the land. Asher Hashem elokecha noten lecha nachala lerushta. Oh, sounds fantastic. There are never going to be any evyonim. There are never going to be any. And of course, the Torah has many words for poor people. An evyon is someone who is really pretty desperate. An ani, by the way, when we use aniim, aniim are people who are poor, but not because they're desperate. Aniim could have a house, a job, a car, but at the end of every month, when they work out the money, it's in the red, not in the black. There's more coming out every month than coming in every month. That's the definition is an ani. They're not destitute. But an evyon is more so. And then there's a dal and a rash, but not for now. So then, look, there won't be any evyonim. That sounds like a great promise. But literally, 7 psukim later, it says, Ki lo yechdal evyon mikerev haaretz. There will never be a lack of poor people. Don't worry. Okay, well, what's going on? Meaning, if one was in Shmat and one was in Dvarim, I mean, I don't know, still we'd have a problem. But they're literally in the same section. There'll never be a shortage of poor people. So what is it? There'll never be poor people, or there'll always be poor people. Somehow they'll all have to go together. Yes, sir?
Excuse me, the word Ephes, I'm not sure if it means that there will never be, but I think it means it is impossible without, for example, Ephes ki az a'am.
I don't think that's right, because if you're saying it's impossible that there won't be any poor people, but look at the next bit, because I've blessed the land so much. That seems a bit of a non sequitur. But look, let's have a look. We'll make it work shortly. But first we have to go to a sugya, which I'm sure many people are familiar with. Number 6. Shnayim shehayu mahalchim baderech. 2 people on a desert road. Ubiyad echad meham kiton shalmayim. And one of them has the water that they can drink, and they're both dehydrating, and they're both desperate. What are they going to do? In Shotin Shnehem, if they share the water, mating, they will die, both of them. Now, it's not guaranteed. You never know. You know, they'll pray. Maybe a miracle will happen, a miracle in this kind of natural way. A plane will spot them. A jeep will come over the sand dunes and see them. Could happen. Give them a little bit more time. But in all likelihood, if they share the water, they'll dehydrate, they won't make it to nightfall, and they'll both be finished. Ve'im shote echad mehem. But if one of them drinks the water, magi eli yishuv, they'll make it. Probably they'll make it to nightfall, there's enough, but once it's night, it's cool, they'll have a whole, you know, another 8, 9, 10 hours to find, they'll make it home, or they'll make it somewhere. What should they do? Should they share it, and pray, and almost certainly die? Or should They drink it, one of them drink it, and the other one don't. So look what he says. We've looked at this before in different shirim, but let's look at it in this context. Darash ben Petura. Ben Petura made the following drasha. We'll talk about him in a minute. Mutav sheyishtu shnehem v'yamutu. Better they should both drink and both die. Va'al yira adamehem b'misasa shel chavera. And how can one of them stand by and see the death of their friend? Now, this is, by the way, an interesting ethical question that was also discussed, Lahavdil, by the Romans. It's in Cicero, it's in other places. The example they usually give is two people are shipwrecked when a ship goes down, and they're hanging on to a piece of wood, and if they both hang on to the plank of wood, it'll go down. But if one of them lets go, then the other one will be saved. And that's usually the way in which they discuss it. This maybe is a little bit different because they're already hanging on as opposed to, you know, each of them has an equal claim to this piece of wood, whereas here one person has a bottle of water and the other person is asking them to share. Okay, there are similarities, but this was a well-known ethical conundrum. So Ben Petura comes along and says, share it and die. Ad Sheba Rabbi Akiva, until Rabbi Akiva comes along and says, V'limeid, and he learns from the Pasuk, V'chei Achicha Imach, which we'll see in a minute, that's Pasuk in the context, and that your brother will live with you. Chayecha Kodmim L'chai Chavecha. Your life takes precedence over the life of your friend. How is he, and therefore drink the water, and if the other person dies, it's terribly sad, but that's not your responsibility. How does he learn your life takes precedence from this pasuk? Because of the word imach. He could have said, help your brother so they will live. V'chei achicha. But he says, no, v'chei achicha imach. So that your brother will live with you. If you are going to self-destruct, if you're not going to be there with them after you've helped them, that's that you do not need to help them. Help your brother so they will live together with you, but not at the expense of you. Okay, that's what Rabbi Akiva said. So we're faced with two opinions. Which one are we going to follow? So intuitively, every time I teach this shir, even to you know students who have less background, everyone always says, Rabbi Akiva. We have to follow Rabbi Akiva. Why would we follow Rabbi Akiva? Because you're going to say, well, you know, I've heard of Rabbi Akiva. I've never heard of this other guy. We'll talk about that in a minute. Okay, that's not a very halachic answer. You could give the answer, well, isn't there a halachic cloud that when Rabbi Akiva disagrees with one other person, we always pass him like Rabbi Akiva? Yes, there is, almost always. Okay, good, we could apply that and get to Rabbi Akiva. Or you could turn around and say, well, Rabbi Akiva does something that the other Tana doesn't do. What does he do? He brings a pasuk. He brings a pasuk. Okay, that's great. So he has a proof. On the other hand, Ben Petura, it says Darash Ben Petura. He's getting it from somewhere. Where is Ben Petura getting it from? So probably the best bet for where Ben Petura is coming from is V'yahavta L'recha Kamocha. Meaning if you are trying to treat other people as you'd want to be treated, and don't do to others what you wouldn't want them to do to you, so if you were the person without the water, begging the other one to share it, you'd be begging them, please share the water, give me a chance, give me a chance. So if you don't, if you're the one with the water, so how can you not treat them as you would want to be treated? You share the water, and you know, pray. And by the way, it's very interesting, in some systems, even with, we had a share on the Ethiopian halachic system a long time ago, if you remember, when we were talking about sigets, and the Ethiopians, not on this particular issue, but their tradition, they didn't have this idea of v'chai bahem. They would not break Shabbat even to save life. Now, obviously, the Ethiopian community changed when they came to Israel and all agreed that they should change. But because they said, look, you don't get to decide when you die, usually, most people, and we, you know, hope to live a long and fulfilled life, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides, so maybe this is the time to share it, and if it's the end, it's the end. You can't control everything. Ben Petura is coming from there. Now, the problem is, who is Ben Petura? Again, Rabbi Akiva is probably the most famous Tana in the whole, you know, Torah, in the whole Mishnah and the Talmud. But Ben Petura, no one's ever heard of him. This is the only place that he appears in the whole of Shas. And one theory is that Ben Petura is a nickname. Sometimes when a Tana appears just once or an opinion, they get the nickname for the thing that they say. They only said this in the whole of the liturgy, in the whole of the literature, rather. And all he said was die. That's the only thing he said was die. What is die? Petira. Okay, Nifta. Ben Petira. He's Rabbi Death. because all he ever adds to Judaism is die. Okay, that's one theory. There's another theory that he is someone called Rabbi Yehuda ben Petiri, who appears in a couple of other places and seems to say similar kind of things. I'm not getting into all of the weeds on that. There is a slightly, you know, out there opinion, which was doing the rounds around 25 years ago, that it could be that ben Petura actually is representing an early Christian position on this. Which is that, you know, man hath no greater love for his fellow than he lay down his life for his friend, which, as you will know, is not from our Chumash or our Tanakh, but it is a quote from the Gospel of John. And the idea that maybe Ben Petura is Ben Pantira or Pandera, and once you start giving Pandera, so everyone knows Yoshke Pandera, what's going on with there, that's maybe a reference to Christianity and even to Jesus. Now, there's a very interesting debate between Rav Meidan, Rav Yaakov Meidan, and another. This was put forth in an article in the Alon, in the magazine of the Haaretz Zion in the year 2000. I've got the version at home. And this was put forward by someone called Shmuel Yanai. I don't know if it's the Professor Shmuel Yanai from Haifa, but Shmuel Yanai. And Rav Meidan hits back with great ferocity and says, there's no way that this guy is Jesus appearing in the Talmud giving this particular shita, and he proves it why it is, etc. But that's an interesting idea. There's also the idea of Petira and Petros is Peter, and there's a lot to be discussed there. But let's assume that that's a little bit off the radar. Ben Petura is someone we don't know very much about. So how are we going to pass it? So have a look, first of all, at this posseg that we just quoted, number 7. Al tikach mi'itu neshek. Don't take interest from people when you loan them money. V'tarbit. And different kinds of interest. V'yoreita me'elokecha. You have to fear God. V'chei achicha imach. That's where the posik comes from. So your brother will live with you. This posik is talking about lending money on interest. So here we look in slightly broader terms at this Gemara we quoted of the two people walking on the desert in the desert. Where does that come from? Well, that's in Bava Metzia, it's in Ezo Neshech, it's about interest, so how does that appear? So look at the sugi just before, it's all part of the same discussion. Look at number 8. So these are the lines just before the story of the two people in the desert. Amar Rebbe Elazar, ribit ketsutza yotzav bedayanim. This is talking about a technical question in Hilchus Ribbit. If you lend interest in a way which is interest de'oraita, it's fixed interest, and the person has paid you interest in breach of the halacha, can they get that money back in the Beis Din? Meaning they take you to the Beis Din and say, not only did this person breach the Torah and charge me interest and I paid it, but I want that money back. I want restitution of the money that I paid. So he says, yes, you can get it back. You can yosef b'dayanim, you can go to court and get the interest back. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Rabbi Yochanan says, no, I feel a ribit ketsutza nami eini yotzei b'dayanim. For technical reasons, no, once you've paid, he shouldn't have charged you, but you're not able to get it back in the Beis Din. Okay, not getting into the detailed discussion. So Amar Rabbi Nachman Yitzchak, my time with the Rabbi Elazar, why does Rabbi Elazar hold that you can get money back in the Beis Din, fixed interest back? The Amar Krakos, the Posek, ends v'chei achicha imach. Well, how is he learning those words? Meaning, don't charge other people interest, and even more, if you did charge people interest, make sure that your brother is able to live with you, i.e. give him the money back. Give him the money back. And therefore the Gemara learns, and Rabbi Elazar understands, hahadalei, restore, return the money to him, kihechidenechi, so that he will be able to live. That's what he's learning from. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, v'chei achicha imach doesn't have anything to do with interest. Hi, v'chei achicha imach, my avilei, what does he do with that line? No, nothing to do with interest. Miboilei, he needs it. Kedatania, as we learn in the Braisa, shnayim shehayu mahalchim b'derech, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Meaning Rabbi Yochanan is the one that learns v'chei achicha imach to relate to the episode in the desert. Rabbi Elazar says, no, it's got nothing to do with that. It's to do with interest. That pasuk is not free to learn for the issue of two people wandering in the desert. And the assumption here, which is normally the assumption in the Gemara, is you can't use a pasuk for two different things. You can't double dip when it comes to drashas. It either is used for this or it's used for that. Now you could start breaking it up and say, the Rosh says in like, well, maybe v'chei achicha is used for the ribbis, and imach is used for the other one, but the assumption here is, no, you have to either take it for this or take it for that. And I brought you here number 9, Rabbi Yeruchim Fishel Perlo wrote a commentary on Rav Sadia Gaon's Sefer HaMitzvahs. Now Rav Sadia Gaon's Sefer HaMitzvahs is about 10 pages long. It's like a poem where Rav Sadia Gaon goes through all the mitzvahs. And Rabbi Yeruchim Fishel Perlo's book, commentary on that, is about 1,000 pages long. He basically uses it as a platform to have an entire discussion about the mitzvot and what the mitzvot mean. And he says, number 9, Ube Emet, the truth is, HaRambam, VeHasmag, VeHatur, both the Rambam and the Smag, Sefer Mitzvot Gadol, and the Torah, Loi Heviyu Hachdin in the Rebbe Akiva. They never quote this din of Rebbe Akiva. Everybody in this room knows because it's in our blood. Yeah, if two guys in the desert, you drink the water. Why? V'chei achicha imach. The Rambam never says that. The Torah never says that. They never bring that drosh of Rebbe Akiva. U'kvar kasv, k'sas achronim, and I'll suggest why that is. The time is shum the lididan, because we kind of land to Rebbe Elazar. We paskin like Rebbe Elazar, the ribis katsutsa yosef b'dayanim. We paskin like Rebbe Elazar in ribis. And he used that posik for something else. And therefore he says, loy kai malan karebi akiva. Maybe we taka don't paskin like Rebbe Akiva, which is very interesting, because then you're back to Ben Petura, which is share it and pray. Because you can't paskin like one and paskin like another. And nobody really wants to accept that, because like, we have to paskin like Rebbe Akiva somehow, and therefore we have to somehow find a way to split this posuk up and use it in different ways. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein also says it's not possible we don't paskin like Rabbi Akiva. There has to be a limit. You can't share the water. You have to be able to drink the water. So look at what Rabbi Moshe Feinstein says in number 10 and 11. 10 is the Rambam, and Rabbi Moshe is going on the Rambam. Says number 10, the Rambam paskins, mitzvah asei liten tzedakah la'aniyim. There is a positive Torah mitzvah to give money to poor people, to aniyim. According to their needs. Okay, that's a whole shit in and of itself. How do we assess how much they need? But then he says, im haitayat hanoten maseget. But only if you can afford it. Okay, I mean, isn't that obvious? If I can't afford it, but what does that mean, if I can afford it? What can I afford? How do I know how much I can afford? If somebody comes to me and says, oh, I heard you're a big Balstocker, can you give me $500? It'll change my entire life. And I look into the case and tackle this guy, $500, going to turn his life around. Of course I should give him $500. Why? Okay, that's real money, but it's not going to be a life-changing thing for me to give away $500 to someone who really needs it. So then I get another call from someone, oh, I hear you're giving away $500, because I really need $500 as well. And everybody's then jumping on me, they all need $500. At what point do I say, I'm sorry, I can't afford this anymore? Do I have to wait till I have $499 left in my bank account, and then I'll say, hey, I'm joining you, I also need $500. Obviously no, I don't have to wait to that point. Okay, good. But a chomish on each occasion, I don't have to give more than a chomish for each ask. Okay, so how big a period? Is it over a year? So clearly, I can stop giving away $500 to everybody at a certain point, and they'll say, well, how much do you have in your bank account? I say, well, it's none of your business, but I have $25,000 in my bank account. Okay, so you can afford it. Well, no, because this money is for my kids' education, my kids' family vacation. And you're going to say, what? Your family vacation is worth more than turning my entire life around? To which the answer might be, well, yes, I need a vacation, but how do you, it doesn't sound right when you say it that way, but clearly I don't have to wait till I'm under the 500. So we have to define what that means. So look at Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein says as follows, number 11. Aval betzdaka, when it comes to giving tzedaka, who tanai b'hachiyuv, it's not a shi'ur, it's not a limit, it's part of the conditions of the obligation itself. Durak kishim aseget yada, that only when you can afford it, nema mitzvah tzedaka, is that mitzvah applicable? It's not like, oh, I've given the amount I have to give. If I can't afford it, I don't have the mitzvah. We just have to work out what is called afforded and not afforded. And that is why, if I've explained that this follows Rabbi Akiva, the Leica Ben Petura, we absolutely are not following Ben Petura. You have to put your life first, and we'll define what life means, because the $500 is not a life and death situation, but we'll see how that works. Of course, you have no obligation to die, to help someone else. The law la avor, and not to do averas. The nimsa shinaka the Rambam dinda Rabbi Akiva. He says, I think this Rambam that I just quoted, that you only have an obligation to give tzedakah if you can afford it, I think it's an application of Rabbi Akiva. This is what you said, does the Rambam rule like Rabbi Akiva? Yes, here. Now, it's interesting, Rabbi Akiva was a life and death issue. This is not a life and death issue, but we'll see where Rabbi Feinstein is getting this from. Huposhet, it's obvious to me, he says, Shetzanai zehu mikra, this is coming from the posuk of the Chei Achicha Imach. It's from that posuk. V'chein b'minyan ha-mitzvahs, and then he does something absolutely brilliant that only Rav Moshe Feinstein will be able to pull this out of a hat. He says, if you look at how the Rambam counts the mitzvahs, Kasav, he writes, Liten staka kemasat yado. The definition of the mitzvah is to give staka as much as you can afford. Mashma, which sounds to me, shehu tanai b'chiv, which is not just the limit, but is the very condition of the whole mitzvah. The law is shi'ura. It's not just like, oh, I've done it, I finished it. Shelo shaykh leminkat shar, shi'ur, sorry, b'shem ha-mitzvah. You wouldn't write in the headline for this mitzvah that the limit is if you can afford it. No, it's not the limit. It's the definition of what the mitzvah is. By the way, where does the Rambam write this? So I looked it up. There's a thing called minyan ha-mitzvahs. If you look in Sefer HaMitzvahs, he goes through all 613 mitzvahs in some detail. And there, which is his introduction to the Mishnah Torah. And then the Rambam has something called Minyan HaMitzvahs, where he just shorthand records all 613 again. And I said, oh, it must be there. And I looked there, and it wasn't this wording. So I'm scratching my head, and I'm thinking, did Rav Moshe Feinstein have a different gears in the Rambam? And then I start looking around, gears, maybe he had, and I couldn't find anything. And then it dawned on me that the Rambam, a third time, goes through just the headlines. Before each chapter in the Mishnah Torah, he gives a little headline, and these are the mitzvahs that you do that I'm going to discuss in this chapter. And it's in that list where he uses the wording that staka is a mitzvah to give what you can afford. That's the mitzvah. Not to give what you can afford. And he says, this is based on Rabbi Akiva, and we have to define what that means and how that works, which we're going to do right now. Now, just coming back to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva didn't say you have to drink the water. It's quite possible that Rabbi Akiva would agree that there are extreme cases where the person with the water might turn around and say, you know something, let's say the person with the water is 110 years old, and has 2 weeks to live for whatever reason, and the person who's the other person is a young person with a whole life. He might turn around, or she might turn around and say, you know something, Rabbi Akiva says I can drink the water, but hey, sonny, you take the water, have a good life, and maybe Rabbi Akiva's okay with that. He's just saying that if you drink the water, you don't have to feel guilty, and maybe it'll help with your therapy afterwards when they're trying to help you with dealing with the issue. You can say, well, at least you're passing like Rabbi Akiva. Oh, that's okay then, that's fine. But what the psak that brings Rabbi Akiva into this more subtle discussion of not life and death, but what can I afford, is a much less well-known Gemara in Midorah. Look in number 12. Look at this Gemara in Midorah. Ma'ayan shel bnei ha'ir. A city has a water source. Now let me give you the context here. There's a drought, and nobody has anything to drink. And towns all around the area are in dire straits. Nobody has any water. And then one town finds water. They strike water in a ma'ayan. They find a spring. And then the town down the road hears about it and calls them up and says, oh, you found water. Can you help us? Can you save some of our people? Well, if we save some of your people, then that's at the expense of some of our people. We don't have unlimited water. So what do they do? So here's the case. Number 12. Ma'ayan shel bnei ha'ir. If a town finds a spring in this situation, chayehen v'chei acherim. If it's their lives versus other people's lives, chayehen koydim l'chei acherim. Their lives take precedence over the town down the road. And again, here, clearly that's Rabbi Akiva, the people with the water drink the water, and they may not be allowed to give it away because they're responsible for their people. It's not just them, but they're responsible for their people. Okay, so far so good. Your life versus their life. Your life takes precedence. Okay, next case. Behemtam, your animals. Ubehemas acherim. The case in scenario number two is each town now has found water to save lives. Oh, Baruch Hashem. No one's dying. But the one town has extra water to feed the animals. And the other town has no extra water. The animals will die. Whose animals get saved? If you have water for your animals, do you share it and save other people's animals? Now, this is not life and death. But it's not, animals here are not like pets. It's not like your little dog. It's they need it for food. They need it for machinery. You know, every time the Torah says a shor, an ox, think of a tractor. Every time it says a chamor, a donkey, think of a pickup truck. You know, if my animals die, then okay, I'll live this week, but what's going to be for next year? So who gets the extra water for the animals? Says the Gemara, Behemtan kodenis lebehemas acherim, second line of number 12. You can give your animals first. Okay, that's interesting, because that's when it comes to money, I can prioritize my people, not just life and death. Next, the Gemara says, scenario three, kfisatam va kfisat acherim, your laundry versus their laundry. New scenario, scenario three, each town has enough water to live and enough water to give their animals. But now one of the towns has extra water for personal hygiene. They can wash their clothes. They can take a shower. And the other town says, hey, we'd like to wash some of our clothes and we'd also like to take a shower. Please share it with us. Says the Gemara, if that's the choice they have, their personal hygiene needs take precedence over other people's personal hygiene. Okay, so this is getting to sound, first of all, a bit repetitive, I get this, and a little bit self-centered. You know, oh, I always come first, my needs come first, my laundry comes first, okay, how does that work? Okay, we'll see. We'll see that the Gemara is actually lulling us into a false sense of security. Don't turn the page yet, because the kicker's just about to come. Because the Gemara now asks a false scenario. The end of number 12, it says, okay, now what about this case? What about their lives? Ukfisatan and your laundry. Meaning they have no water at all. They're dying. And you have water to drink, water for animals, and water for personal hygiene. What's more important, their life or your personal hygiene? Says the Gemara. What a question. Of course, their lives come before your personal hygiene. And then, of course, and you just read ahead and asked the question. Rabbi Yose says, no. Kfisatan kodemes l'chayacherim. Your laundry comes before their lives. Now that, of course, is the line that the Gemara was bringing you to. That's the chiddush. Why? Why would Rabbi Yossi, who we paskin like, by the way, because Rabbi Yossi, we almost always paskin like, why would we say that your personal hygiene needs take precedence over other people's lives? So let's have a look at the Ran. The Ran, on page 3, the Ran says as follows. The Ran on the Durham here. Number 13. Rabbi Yossi, Omek Kisatan Shal Oysa Ha'ir. Rabbi Yossi says that the laundry of that particular town, Kodemet Neshtiatan, takes precedence over the drinking Shal Bnei Ir Acheret of the next town down the road. Why? Disvira Le, because he holds, Svira Le to Rabbi Yossi, the Kevan de Menias Kvisa, because if you don't have any way to deal with personal hygiene for the length of time we're talking about, Iketsara Tuva. It's very distressing. And therefore, Chaye Nefesh Hu. And therefore, that's like your life. Now, of course, it's not actually life and death. Let's say we all did a deal, everyone sitting in this room, we're not going to do any washing, we're not going to do any laundry, we're not going to have any showers for 3 months. We're just going to wear exactly what we wear right now. Okay, and what we're going to do is all the money that we normally pay, put into detergent and water and running the washing machine, we're going to pool all that money and we're going to give it and we're going to save lives. And we could do that. I mean, we really could save lives, many, many lives. Okay, we'll be very uncomfortable after a few days. After a week or two, we'll be very smelly. We'll probably end up with body lice. But you know something? You can get deloused. You can get cleaned up. It's going to be very uncomfortable. We're going to save lives here. Like, how can you even not want to do that? The answer is nobody in this room is going to do that. And neither am I. Okay? Because it's... Why? Why not? Oh, well, what's more important? Like, personal hygiene or lives? No, says the Rabbi Yossi, this is not just an inconvenience. This is tsara tuva. You've crossed a line. You've crossed a line where, no, I can't do this. This will make me in some way, we'll see the language soon, poor in a real way. It's not going to cost me my life, but it's a line that I'm not prepared to cross. Let's give another example. Let's say that my wife, is washing the clothes, and I say to her, you know, sweetheart, I feel a bit guilty. We run the washing machine. You know, let's sell the washing machine. Let's save all the money that we use in washing machine. And maybe you could do the washing, wash the clothes down in the creek, like your great-grandmother used to do. You know, go down, there's a Mayan, take a bag, do the clothes there, and, you know, we don't need a washing machine. We could save lives with the money we spend on that. My wife is going to look at me. She's going to say, you learn this Torah, and you've got no sense in your head. She's going to say, yeah, you do the washing, she's going to say. She's going to say to me, I need a washing machine. And so the answer is, well, my grandmother didn't have a washing machine. She washed and she had a mangle. No? Not a mangal like a barbecue, but a mangle. You know, I remember as a kid, don't put your hand in there. I was very like, and she managed. So she's going to say to me, no, for your grandmother, a washing machine was a luxury. For me, a washing machine is a necessity. It's not a luxury. So how are we going to draw that line? How are we going to talk about what is called Sarah Tuva, even though their need is objectively greater than yours? They're dying and you're having showers, but that's a line you don't have to cross. It's not pekuach nefesh. You're not going to die from getting body lice. It's going to be... Good. Pekuach nefesh is something that sets aside Shabbos, sets aside other things. But it doesn't mean... But it doesn't set aside everything. Now here we're trying to work out what that line is. So let's have a look at the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch. Number 14, you can read in your own time a little bit. I brought you a piece from what's called the Sefer Yad HaKetana, which is a very interesting Perush, which lesser known Perush Rav Dov Berish Gottlieb on the Mishnah Torah. And he also puts in there, he goes through the mitzvah of Ahavas Reim, a mitzvah to love other people. He also, if you could maybe just go to, let's just read the first five lines and get a feel for it, and you'll see the line that I'm looking for. Mitzvah kol adam la'elves kol ha'echad ve'echad mi'yisrael kegufo, you have to love every other Jew like yourself. Shenema ve'ehavta l'recha kamocha. Lefikach tzarek l'sabe b'shvacha, you have to speak nicely about other people. L'chusam amoni, be worried about their possessions. U'ka'ashi u'chas al-mamon atzmo, just like you're worrying about your own possessions, v'roitzi b'kvod atzmo, and you want people to give you respect. Ve'avasoi v'chem loser al-chaveru, your love and your care for your friend. It's like your love and your care for yourself. He's quoting the Rambam and Sefer Mitzvahs. And whatever he's trying to do in life, you're happy. You want him to get what he wants. And you're sad when he's sad. And you always speak nicely to people. Covered in a respectful and nice way. Aval, and here's the key, it's in the middle of the fifth line. Kol hachiv shel zot mitzvah, your obligation of this mitzvah, hu ba'oifen shelo yagia bo nezek. This is only if you don't suffer nezek to do that. Okay? Damage to do that. Because of the love. Ushelo yitzdarech lahaniach malachto, you don't have to lose your job for helping other people. They are siyat malechas haver, because you're helping other people with theirs, and then he brings that from Rabbi Akiva. So clearly this is a limitation within the mitzvah of chesed, and how are we going to draw that line? What's called nezek? People, it's always going to cause some inconvenience to do chesed. Oh, do I really have to go to this, shiva house? I've got things planned for tonight. I'm going to miss out. Yes, it's always going to cost something. There's always going to be a cost in doing chesed. You have to not do that so you can do that. Where is the line going to be? Well, this is not just a cost. This is nezek. So have a look at this Gemara here, number 15. And we'll see the Shulchan Aruch, the Paskin Siv. Says the Gemara as follows. There's a Mishnah in Bava Metzia. Aveidasa va'aveidas aviv. If you have a choice between bringing back your lost property or the lost property of your father, aveidasu kademis, yours takes priority. Aveidasu va'aveidas rabbi, what about your lost property and your rabbi's lost property? Shalok kadem, also yours takes precedence. What, says the Gemara. Mina hani mili, where do we learn this from? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Amar Kra, Efes ki lo yeh b'cha evyon. Remember that posuk? There will not be any poor people. They're not reading it like that. They're reading it, there's enough poor people already. We see that in the second passage. There's enough poor people. Don't make more poor people. Don't make yourself into a poor person. That's how the Gemara is reading it. Yours comes first, yes?
What happens if you have only enough money for either your parents or your children who are very poor?
Oh, that's a very good question. I'm not getting into the weeds of that possibly that question. It depends on what the needs are of your parents. What's it for? Do they want to go on a holiday, or do they need it in order to pay for their living expenses, otherwise they won't live? What kind of Torah is your child learning? Have they been learning Torah for 15 years and they're not that good at it anyway? And you're probably better off putting the money into your parents. Are you bringing the next Gadol HaTorah into the world? It's very, very case specific. Not everybody that's learning Torah should be learning Torah, and plenty of people who are not learning Torah should be learning Torah. So I'm not getting into that right now, but let's have a look. Shelcha kodem l'shel kol adam. The Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav kol hamakayim atzmo kach. But if you behave this way, I come first, which you're allowed to because you don't make yourself poor. Save Bali Dekach, then you'll end up like that. Like what? So Rashi says, even though the Pasuk doesn't say you have to, you can say, I come first. You have to push yourself beyond the letter of the law. The Lola Dakdek, and not be too careful to say, Sheli Kodem. Oh, I come first. I'm not allowed to make myself poor. Unless it's like a real loss. You have to decide, is it a real loss? Because if you're always so careful to put yourself first, you'll never do any chesed for anyone. You'll never give any stock for anyone. Oh, I need this money. I want to buy myself a coffee. I like my coffee. Why would I give this to stocker? You'll never do anything. And as a punishment, you'll end up a stocker case yourself. Because if that's how you behave, midah keneged midah, you'll end up needing other people. And the Shulchan Aruch paskens this. Let's just look in the three lines in number 16. He says, "Misha avdaloy aveda," someone who loses lost property, upaga ba'avedasoy ba'avedas chaveru, and they find it together with their friends' lost property. Let's put a scenario on this. You go on a vacation, and the airline loses all your luggage. Okay, you come back, no luggage, and then a week later, the airline calls you and say, "We found all your luggage and your friends and your family that you went on vacation with. It's all at the airport. Come and pick it up." Great. You drive to the airport. You park the car. You walk into the airport, and instead of being locked up in some secure area, they've just left it in the middle of the concourse. And now you have a halachic and ethical dilemma: whose case do I take back to the car first? There's just you there. Do I take my case? Do I take my friend's case? Do I take my dad's case? Do I take my rabbi's case? A bit strange you went on holiday with your rabbi, but okay. let's leave that aside, okay? I could only take one. Which do I take? What am I going to prioritize? He says, if you come across your lost property with other people's, im yachol lachzor es shteihem, if you can carry everything back, okay, chayv lachzirim, so you have to carry everything back. Ve'im lo, but if you have to choose, yachzir et shelo, you can take yours back. Because your lost property takes precedence even over your father, even over your rabbi. As we bring in the Pasuk, he doesn't always bring Pesukim in Shulchan Aruch, interestingly. But he says, this Pasuk means, don't make yourself poor. And then he says, nevertheless, you should really push yourself beyond the strict letter of the law. The lala dak deik v'loma, don't be too quick to say, sheli kodem, I come first. Im loy behefsed muchach, unless it's clearly a major loss. The im tamid bedak deik, because if you're always so careful to put yourself first, porik memenu ol malchus gemurus chazadim. You'll never do any chesed because you'll always put yourself first. So that's exactly what we saw. So what's going on here?
That's what this
midah is. Yeah, okay, but that's midat stom as well, and therefore you have to always go past midat stom if you possibly can. It's funny, my granddaughter came home from Gambia the other day seeing the Amar Rabbi Akiva, Zek Cloud Godel Batura, Sheli Shelcha, Sheli Shelcha, Shelcha, and all that. And she was singing the song, dancing around the room, and then her little sister, wanted something, and she said, "No, that's mine." Okay? And my wife spotted an educational moment, and she said to my granddaughter, she's only five, she said, to like, "What happened to Sheli Shelcha, Shelcha, Shelcha? You just sang the song for 20 minutes." And she's like, I don't actually keep this stuff. We just see it in Cheder. You know, we just see it in Gan. This is real. This is real. So it's very interesting. So what's going on here is that, yes, I'm allowed to put myself first, but only when it's a real line. Like the things I suggested, you don't have to get body lice in order to save lives. You don't have to sell the washing machine when you've got a family you need to wash clothes because your grandmother did without it. It's clear to me that in the case of the student that called me and said to me, you know, I'm being dragged into clinical depression because of this relationship, there's no question in my mind that that is called the tsara tuva. That is a serious line. That is the line beyond which you do not, and maybe you should not, go, even if the other person's need is objectively greater, because that is making you really poor. Not financially poor necessarily, but emotionally, psychologically poor. That's a line. What about me and my little boy with the homework? So that's a good call. On the one hand, if I get up from what I'm doing and my little kid sees me, you know, going to the door and speaking to people and giving stalker, that's great role modeling. You know, my dad's going to give stalker, it's a big mitzvah, he prioritizes it, that's lovely. There's going to come a point in this, he was then 5, he's now Baruch Hashem 30, there's going to come a point in this 5-year-old's mind, which he's not able to even articulate, when he starts to have that kind of rabbi's children syndrome, which is that my parents have some kind of messiah complex, they're there for every single person in the world, except for me, except for me. Now when I sense that it's reaching that point, I think that's a line. I think that's a line. I am not required, maybe should not, impoverish in this way, put into my kid's mind this feeling just because I want to help someone whose need is objectively greater. But it's a judgment call. If you think about this, we do this all the time. Let me give you a very stark example. Let's say somebody is sick and they go to the hospital and the hospital say, well, we'd love to be able to treat them and we know how to treat them, but we just don't have enough money. We've run out of budget and we only have 2 machines and they're both being used and I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do. That happens. That really does happen. You know, even with the best insurance in the world, that happens. And you leave the hospital and you think, okay, it's terrible. It's a tragedy. But okay, money is finite. They only have so much money. Correct. But then you walk across the road and they're planting flowers on the roundabout in the traffic circle across the road. And you run back into the hospital and say, well, I thought you said that the city has no more money. They have no more money for machines and therefore my friend's not going to make it. But they've got money to plant flowers. What's more important, flowers or lives? Why are they planting flowers when they could be saving lives? So, what's the answer? Should they not plant any flowers? Should they sell? Let's say the city of New York should sell Central Park. Get rid of it. Sell it to property developers. Sell it to Donald Trump. And he'll fill the whole of Central. You know, and we're going to give that money. We're going to put that money into medical research. Let's say he says, every penny I make, I'm going to put into medical research. So what's more important? Like medical, think of how many lives you're going to save, but we'll have no green spaces. That's a poverty. That's a line. Even if the city was being run by Tamidi Chachamim along the lines of the Shulchan Aruch, which may be a scary prospect depending on your position on these things, they still wouldn't say, well, we sell all the green spaces and make, you know, put the money into it. Because people need trees. People need, that's a poverty of society. And therefore, it's a difficult line to be able to cross. And therefore, we have to think to ourselves, I think, Lemaisa, the following. Everybody's born selfish. That's how we all came out. Little M me. We cry. We scream. We don't care about anybody else's needs, sleep patterns. We just, it's just me, me, me. As you get older, they say to people, no, it's not just about you. You have to lerecha kamocha. You have to also put other people first, etc. But then there's the big M me, which is, actually, I'm not being selfish. I need to put myself first. I need to self-focus because I'm crossing a line. That's legit. As long as you're constantly asking, not constantly, but you're asking, am I just being selfish? Because we do drop back into that. Or is this like I've thought this through? And like I come first. Like, you know, when you're traveling with a kid on a plane and they say if the masks come down, then you put your mask on first and then the kid's mask. Oh, what about the kid freaking out saying, why are you doing this for yourself? What about me? What, my chopped liver? So no, you need to put yourself first in order to help other people. And you're not being selfish in that situation. So there are many scenarios in life where we're not being selfish and there are others when we are. And what the halacha is telling us at the end of the day is just think about it. That's all. If it's a line that makes you poor, you don't have to cross that line. If it's not, Maybe you do. I don't know. Depends. And therefore, it's going to leave. Every single person in this room has a different analysis of that. And therefore, you have to think about that and plug that in. So we'll leave that there. Thank you so much. And we'll see you. I'll see you, please God, in 3 weeks from today.